and you are listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart, and we're going to have Rick Santorum coming up here in just a minute to talk about the Graham Cassidy healthcare bill. He was one of the chief architects, but first, a word from our sponsors.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
And we're back, and this is Shane Vanderhart, and on the line I've got former U.S. Senator and Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum. Senator Santorum was one of the chief architects of the Graham Cassidy bill that is sponsored by U.S. Senators Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy. Bill Cassidy happens to be a doctor as well, and he's going to explain why he thinks this is a good replacement for Obamacare. So, Senator, thanks for joining us. Could you tell us what the Graham Cassidy bill actually does?
Yeah, in short, what it does is take Obamacare, which is a federally run and federally orchestrated system out of Washington, D.C., that is growing at an unsustainable rate and insurance premiums spiraling out of control. And takes that program and takes almost all the money that is used, and I'll explain what money is not, but almost all the money is used and distributes it to the states and gives them the opportunity for each of the 50 states to design a system that is going to work best for the people in their states and use competition and innovation from state to state to, you know, have these sort of laboratories of you know, what's the best way to take care of those who are not covered by employer-provided insurance. And that's the nut of it. You know, people talk about, though, this is slashing money. The only money that we're really cutting out of this program is the money that comes from fining people who don't buy insurance. You know, there's the individual and employer mandate that's in Obamacare, and we say, well, we're not going to tax you for not buying insurance. And so that money comes out of the pool, but all the other money is basically staying in and given to the states in order for them to come up with a solution that is, you know, going to provide higher quality and more efficient healthcare.
Now, I've heard a complaint. It cuts funds to blue states. That goes back to what you were talking about with the individual employer mandate.
Yeah, it cuts funds to blue states in this respect, that those states that expanded, which were primarily blue states, Iowa obviously is an expansion state. Those states that expanded, right now get a lot more money than the 19 states that didn't expand. And the whole point of a block grant is to bring about parity between all those, irrespective of whether you expanded or not. And so over time, and, you know, there's a phase in where the states that didn't expand are going to go up because they're going to get more money. And the states that didn't expand, we're writing the formula so they don't go down. And most states don't go down at all. In fact, they just grow a little slower.
Right.
In some states, a couple like California, Massachusetts actually do go down because they have such expensive Medicaid programs and they draw down so much of the federal dollars. I mean, three states draw down 37% of the money.
Okay.
Just to give you an idea. I mean, it's really outrageous how much. So that money is now spread out over all of the states. And then, you know, after a certain period of time, we reach parity. In other words, everybody in the United States, we target this money based on lower income people, not Medicaid eligible people, but people just above Medicaid eligibility. That's the denominator. It's people 50 to 135% of poverty, 38% of poverty. That's the denominator by which the block grant is divided. And then we just multiply that per capita amount by the number of people in the state of Iowa, and that's how much Iowa gets. So ultimately, that's what the formula will be. But in the meantime, we phase it in very slowly. So again, the states that are right now receiving more money have a slow, a slow march toward parity with the other states.
What's the date for, you know, everybody's supposed to be at the same?
Well, we've been actually tinkering with that over the last week or so. And so, originally we were looking at 6 years. Now we're probably looking at more like 10 years. But we're trying to do our best to try to, you know, ease the effect on what the impact is on states that are expansion states.
Now, what happens after 2026 when the block grants are basically the bill, at least from what I've seen and read, it seems like funding ends.
Yeah, well, the funding doesn't end. It's a bill called a reconciliation matter, and you're only allowed to fund things through. You're only allowed to write the law for 10 years.
Okay.
It's like saying, well, you know, the highway program is only in effect for 6 years, and then we aren't going to have to spend any money on highways. Well, no, you write a 6-year bill, and then you reauthorize it. This is what we do in Washington all the time. And it's sort of funny that they would say, oh, you know, and then it drops off a cliff and they don't fund anything. The ag bill. The ag bill is a 5-year bill, a 6-year bill, a 7-year
right.
bill. That's not because ag programs end in 5 years. It's that Congress has to go back and look at it, see what's right, see what's wrong, and then, you know, reauthorize the bill.
Now, Senator Rand Paul has said this is not a Obamacare repeal, and he's not going to support it. How do you respond to that?
Well, we get rid of Medicaid expansion. Medicaid expansion is gone under this. We get rid of all of the Obamacare exchanges. We get rid of the money that funds those exchanges, and we get rid of the individual mandate. We get rid of the employer mandate. We get rid of the medical device tax. And we take all of the money everything that is spent under Obamacare is abolished. So everything that Obamacare raised taxes for and spent that money is gone. And we take, you know, the net of what we have left in taxes, and we distribute that to the states so they can spend the money to provide the best quality care for the people in their state. So, I don't know what repeal is if that isn't repeal. I mean, the entire guts of Obamacare are gone. And do we keep some of the money? Yes, we do. But it's the same thing saying, well, this really wasn't 20 years ago when we ended welfare as we know it. That really wasn't ending welfare as we know it because we kept spending money on welfare. Well, that's ridiculous. Of course, we're going to continue to try to do some things to help people, you know, afford health insurance who are lower income. The question is, how are you going to do it? That's the fundamental change, just like the fundamental change in welfare was getting that money out to the states. And by the way, we saw a 50% reduction in the number of people on welfare. We saw poverty rates, you know, hit all-time lows. We saw a dramatic increase in the number of people who were getting training and employment. And by the way, that's continued over the last 20 years to the point where during that 20-year period of time, the block grant, the same thing that we're sending out to the states with for healthcare, we actually never have the Congress have never increased that block grant in 20 years. Why? Because governments that are put on a budget and given a target have to be efficient. If they're not efficient, then they run up against their budget targets, and they have to go out and cut other programs at the state level. At the federal level, if the federal government is inefficient, it borrows money.
Right.
So one of the real keys here is getting this bill out, getting this money and power out of Washington, putting it on a budget so it drives quality and efficiency. Because the best way you save money in healthcare is to have a high quality healthcare plan and a healthcare program. Because good quality means shorter hospital stays, less readmissions, less costly care. And so this is what people don't understand. Putting healthcare on a budget is a good thing because it drives innovation and quality, as opposed to this open-ended entitlement, which is Medicaid and which is Obamacare.
Now, what does this bill do for health savings accounts?
It actually expands health savings accounts, allows them to be used to actually purchase insurance. We're still waiting for CBO to give us a score, and so we're sort of trying to figure out how to tweak it. But we're also looking at the possibility of even expanding what contributions can be made. But right now, we're still waiting to see whether we have room in the score to do that. But health savings accounts are going to be treated well, and we actually removed there's a small health savings account tax that we take out also.
Now, is it possible? I've heard some people complain. Hey, a state could actually use this block grant money and do single payer healthcare in their state. Is that possible?
Well, I guess technically you could say it's possible, but the reality is, it's very hard to run a single payer system based on just the individual market. So remember what we're talking about here, and this is some perspective from people. The individual market in the United States is about 6 to 8% of the number of people in this country who buy insurance out. When I say that, I mean, I'm talking about, remember all the other ways that people receive healthcare: Medicare, Medicaid, VA, TRICARE, and employer provided insurance. That makes up well over 90% of the market. And so what we're talking about here is a very small segment of the market of the uninsured and people who buy individual policies. And so to say we're going to go with a single payer system for 6% of the market, Vermont tried it and it failed miserably. It's too small a market for in the state to be able to run something like that. And sure, a state could try it and they could fail, and they would fail, and then they'd try something else. But the point of federalism is you give the states the right to make mistakes and stub their toes.
What kind of response have you been receiving from the Republican senators as well as Democratic senators as you've been talking to them about this bill?
Republican senators, I think, overwhelmingly love the concept, love the idea, would love to see make it work. I mean, the only concern I hear from every senator is, okay, how does my state do?
That's
it's
true.
Like any formula, right? How am I doing? What's my state doing? And so we've been tweaking those numbers now for the interesting thing about this bill is we haven't had a whole lot of help and support in putting this bill together up until the last two or three weeks. And so a lot of this work, we had the conceptual outlines, we had legislative language, we had a lot of things done, but as far as nailing down all of the little particulars, it's been a whirlwind here in the last few days trying to get the little tweaks that are necessary to make sure that you've got a program that number one works well and is fair, and at the same time can get 50 votes to pass.
True. What kind of what are you hearing from governors?
I think there are now 17 or 18 Republican governors who have come out in support of this bill. And I suspect there will be more once people again see the numbers and have those numbers verified from CBO and the Congressional Budget Office and from the White House.
And should this bill pass, do you see any next steps as a follow up?
This is the first bite at the apple. One of the things I want to do is give a lot more flexibility to the governors to be able to really be innovative. We can provide some flexibility in this bill. But because it's this unique animal called reconciliation, there's sort of limits as to the kind of flexibility. HSA is another thing. I'm hopeful with the passage of this, if we can get this passed, that we can then follow up with a tax bill, and we can even deal with some HSA issues on the tax bill. So there's all sorts of other opportunities to enhance this. We're going to look at what the scoring is. We have the Congressional Budget Office is analyzing this based upon a year and a half old baseline back in March of 2016. So when we pass it, we'll then they'll update their baseline, and we'll see, hey, where are we? Did we shoot high? Did we shoot low? And then we'll be able to tweak it from there. So this is not the end, but this is the beginning of a really dynamic time where the debate in healthcare is going to be back in your local community, back in your state, not headed where we're heading to in Washington, which was pretty clear from a little over a week ago when Bernie Sanders got up and said, this is the future of healthcare in America, which is a federally run Medicare system for everybody. That's where the Democrats are going. This cuts them off at the knees.
Well, Senator, I know you got a busy schedule today, so I just want to thank you for your time, and thanks for the information. This is helpful for our listeners.
Thanks so much, Shane. God bless.
Hey, take care. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to our very first Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Be sure to check us out next time. Also, check us out, caffeinatedthoughts.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Sign up for our emails. Don't miss a single update. Thanks for listening. Take care.